And this is I Should Be Writing, Season 17, Episode 33, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting home watching Doctor.
And I don't often do interviews, but actually, y'all have been asking for this wonderful person to come back into my life, which is Jennifer Udden, my former agent and now currently freelance editor extraordinaire. And the people have been wanting you, Jen, so wanted to have you on the show streaming with me. So hi.
Hi. I think we can also say that we're friends now.
Yes, we are, but for professional reasons, I'm not just, like, asking my buddy on the show, who may or may not be involved with science fiction, just she'll want to talk about, like, baking or something.
True. I mean, I have very little to say about baking, but...
Yes, we are friends. I still send Jen inappropriate texts sometimes of weird thoughts I've had or pictures I've... weird bottles of wine I find in the store. So, yes.
As you should.
So how is, before we get started, I gotta remember, I gotta introduce myself. My name is Mer Lafferty, and this is I Should Be Writing. My pronouns are she, her, and I bring you this podcast for wannabe fiction writers so that you can perhaps get through all the things you've been telling yourself for the past 20 years about how you can't be a writer and just get started doing it. So if you want to believe me, then you can go to merverse.com to find out more about me and my books and stuff. Jen is an old friend. She helped get my career... No, she got my career really started and was very, very important in my life and is now a good friend. So Jen, tell us what's been going on with your new editing.
So I guess to give a little bit of background, I was a literary agent for 10 years at a couple of different places. And last year I... decided it was time for a change, and I hung out my shingle, as they say, as a freelance editor. So nowadays I work with authors who are sort of pre-publication, pre-querying to improve their manuscripts, kind of get things shipshape for either self-publishing or pursuing traditional publication. I also have a newsletter that I run called A Faster No, which is free, and we're going to be restarting with Bridget Smith recording my podcast, Shipping and Handling, soon. So that's a little bit of a background.
Yes.
I can talk more about the freelance editing thing if you want, or if you have, you know, more questions.
Well, I think one of the...
I'm just excited to be here.
Yay! One of the main reasons I wanted you on is because of Cheryl, who's in chat. Hi, Cheryl. Hi, Underpope. And Cheryl asked a question and to me, and I'm like, well, I've been wanting to get Jen on, and it's a better question for her. So, Cheryl, I can look it up in the Discord, or if you want to type it in here, that might get us started, because it was such a good question. I really thought someone with your experience should answer it instead of me. Anyway, just give Cheryl a second. What I'm working on is next round of edits for the projects I'm working on. I spent some days feeling sorry for myself that they came back again, and then I went through the letters and wrote down all the notes I needed to stick in my mind and started working at it today. And just like always, it's not as bad as I thought it was, so. But for some reason, I still need that day to feel sorry for myself. I don't know. But anyway, Cheryl asked, what can you expect if you hire someone for a developmental edit?
That is a very good question. And it's really interesting that I've been working with this website called Readsy, which makes a distinction between a developmental edit and an editorial assessment. Basically, what I would say is a developmental edit is going to be a little bit more intense than an editorial assessment. An editorial assessment is sort of not bare bones, but a little bit less detailed, a little bit less attention to sort of the line level writing. The way that I work, and other editors work similarly, but sort of with different methods. I read a manuscript. I write an edit letter, like a pretty formal edit letter. that's about 2 to 3 pages long, depending on the length of the manuscript and how long it needs to be, with separate sections on character, plot, pacing, overall feedback. If there's specific writing tics that I noticed or specific questions that came up, I include those. And then I always have a 30 to 45 minute Zoom call at the end to talk with the author about the project and about, you know, the feedback that I've given. And with a developmental edit, often I'll include questions in the manuscript itself. Like, what did you mean here? Like, what are they feeling here? Suggestions on phrasing or suggestions on, you know, does this scene need to be here? Things like that. So it's a little bit more a little bit more intensive, a little bit more detail oriented, and a little bit more expensive. But it sort of depends on what shape the manuscript is in and what kind of feedback the author really wants to get at that stage in the process.
Excellent. Well, if people in the chat have follow-ups to that, go ahead and put them in. So yeah, I've been covering what I've been reading, trying to be honest there, and I'm both going backwards and forwards because I just picked up Different Seasons by Stephen King because I wanted to read some of those novellas. And I'm also reading, I finally remembered what it was. I think it's The Eighth Detective. Where the
Why
hell?
Why does that sound so familiar?
Let's see. Where? Oh, great. No. Sorry. This is so, it's been such an on week. I got a text from my password software saying, hey, here's your login key. And I'm like, I didn't try to log in. Oh, crap. So I spent some time yesterday changing a lot of my passwords and just realized I changed my Kindle password. So I would have to go through all the rigmarole of logging in. But I'm going to say it's The Eighth Detective because I think it's The Eighth Detective.
Isn't it great when you make yourself so safe that you can't access anything?
Yes. Yes, I love that. It's so awesome. I love feeling so safe. It's great.
Protected from myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but it's an interesting... It starts out with... Like, I read the description of it, and I thought, well, this sounds interesting, and I got it from the library, and then I forgot why I got it, but I started reading it because I figured I had my reasons. And it starts out as, like, this really weak mystery. And I'm thinking, why the hell did I get this book? And then I realized that it's about a mystery writer, and that's their book. So you get, like, a chapter of the crappy mystery, and then the good writing starts. And I'm sorry if they actually intended on the mystery to be good. I don't know that yet. But if the author of the real book had intended the book inside the book to also be awesome, but it hadn't gotten there yet. But I am enjoying it. It's got some good little hints at when two people are having a conversation and one of them is reacting poorly but doesn't explain it. That's the kind of thing that makes you want to keep going. And it's got some good seeds like that. So, Jen, are you reading anything new? Do you read for fun?
I do. Actually, I've been reading a lot for fun recently. I used to really pride myself on reading a lot for pleasure and reading a lot of, you know, recently published stuff. But 2020 obviously did a number on my ability to retain new information. So it's been really fun this year to get back into reading. This week, I've been reading a couple of different things. I started reading... Oh, what did I start reading? It's in the other room. I would get up and go get it, but we're recording.
Mm-hmm.
The Man with the Compound Eyes, whose author I forget. It's sort of literary speculative about, and it's a Taiwanese author. It's in translation. I'm really excited. I'm like 30 pages into that one. But it's funny that you talked about mystery novels because I just finished reading The Hanjin Murders, which is a Japanese, like, it's a true fair play mystery from like 19, I think it's set in 1937 and it was published in like 1950 or something. And it's like a specific, I think it's called Honkaku. It's a specific, there was an article in The Guardian about it like 2 weeks ago. I linked it in my newsletter about this sort of specific genre where it's like, you have all the clues, you can solve the murder yourself, reader. Of course, I'm a dumbass and I'm always like, what? That person did the murder? I'm so surprised. But it's really, really fun and fascinating, and it was a lot of fun. Although it did do this thing where it was like, little did we know that this, you know, seemingly innocuous gesture would be the key to the entire mystery, and you're like, really, like every other page, something was the key to the entire mystery. And I was like, okay, we get it. But I just finished that, and it was a lot of fun.
I prefer stories that you can solve, which is why I don't understand Sherlock Holmes. I don't understand the appeal because it's like I try to read it and figure out the clues, and instead it's, look how smart I am at the end. I'm like, well, you didn't tell us any of that. What? I just, yeah. So I've just never been into Holmes. I don't know what it is. I prefer
It's fair.
things that I can figure out. And there's a Ms. Marple short story that's got absolutely detailed, you need to have detailed alchemy knowledge and biology knowledge to solve it yourself. It's the one with the blue flowers on the wall. It's a short story, but it's been made into one of the Marple movies.
I haven't read many of the short stories. I mean, it's interesting you say that because Christie was famously one of the people who helped formulate the rules for fair play that came up in the golden age of detective fiction. It can't be magic, it can't be twins, it can't be the reader has to have all the clues themselves. And of course, they formulated these rules and immediately started breaking them. I think that
Yes.
she immediately was like, it was, spoiler alert, I guess. The murder of Roger Ackroyd. The
Yes.
narrator did it.
Yeah.
So,
But there's still a clue in there that the narrator did it.
there is, but most people don't read that closely. I don't
Yeah.
read that closely. I'm just like,
I think I've
keep
read
it
enough
going.
mysteries to where if someone says something vague, like my suitcase was open, so I quickly closed it and pushed it into the hall of the closet. And I'm
Like,
like,
what didn't you want people to see?
yeah, what is that? It's like a one sentence and then the scene just keeps going and there's no other thing that points to that person, but I'm just like that's how I figured out one more recent murder mystery is like just a nervous glance at a bag and shoving it into the to the closet and I'm like, "Oh yeah, you're the killer." Yeah, definitely. Cheryl says, "Thank you, Jen, for the developmental question. For context, I had an author friend offer me one for a short story. It did not go well, and I wasn't sure if my expectations were wrong."
It's interesting that she said that. I'm sorry to assume she, her. My pronouns are she, her, FYI. One of the things I think about my role is that my job is to be the sort of neutral third party who is there to be helpful in the process, but the fact that we don't have a personal relationship, I think, is helpful for people because they can trust that the feedback that I'm giving is honest and unbiased. And I think that there's an expectation of sort of what to expect because there's money involved that sometimes doesn't happen if you're working with a friend or with a beta reader or even with, a critique group. Not to say that those things aren't helpful, and I do encourage people to have those in their lives, but I think if you're looking for really honest but also helpful and constructive feedback for a longer work, I think that hiring someone can be helpful.
Yeah, I think so too.
And that's not just me wanting to pay my rent talking.
Cheryl says she enjoys Sherlock Holmes once she looked at it as story adventure tales and not mysteries. Yes. So what I've been doing over, that's right. I apologize, guys. I did not set up the yay button for this new, this is the overlay I use if I have a guest. So I don't have a yay button, but we do a good news portion of the show where when I get good news from people, I get to throw confetti around and push the yay button to make applause happen. And unfortunately, I don't have that, but I still want your good news. And yesterday I got my very first emailed good news to put in the next show, which I'm going to do. So I'm going to read that, and y'all can put your good news in the chat so we can talk about it. This is a very long note, and I just want to say I'll paraphrase a little bit. Sorry, this is Bernadette. For years, I've had a bad habit of reading and listening to advice about writing instead of sitting down and actually doing it. Considered starting with fanfic, but mainstream media made it sound like a waste of time. And then found your podcast, hearing a published author openly endorse fan fiction. not as a warm-up for real writing, but a genuine hobby as an expression of emotions, was a game changer. You gave me the courage to write, and more importantly, to unashamedly write badly. As you say all the time, bad writing can still be considered can still be corrected later, but no writing will be nothing forever. After a decade of being paralyzed in front of my keyboard with the fear of not being able to instantly type up a perfect first draft, this year I've written... It's May now. If you're listening to this much later, it's May. I have written 60,000 words of fan fiction. I'm eternally grateful to have found your podcast. It changed my life for the better, which is awesome.
That's
Bernadette,
awesome.
You get all the pushes of the yay button on Tuesday. But we will remember because that's amazing. And Jen reads and writes fan fiction. I know you read it.
I have just started writing it again, which is wild because I haven't written it since college. But I wrote, Mira actually asked me this question for the newsletter about sort of the uses of fan fiction and, you know, how it sort of fits into a professional career. But I think the idea of it as not only a hobby, but also, what did she call it? Not only a hobby, but also...
Expression of emotions.
Yes, expression of emotions. I think that that's a really good way of describing it. And, you know, I think that it can be such a good, you know, if you're using it sort of specifically to build writing skills, there's so many things you can use it for. Tone, dialogue, voice, world building, pacing, plot. It can be immensely helpful and also just extremely fun. So
yeah.
I heartily endorse.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do something in the Blazeball world since it started, pretty much. And I finally did some fan fiction around the holidays. So that's
60,000 words. That's
yes,
amazing.
That is amazing.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
So keep it up. Everybody in chat is cheering for you, Bernadette, if you're not here. So you should know that the chat is on your side. Keep going, please. Let's see. Phased Out got a unexpected tax refund. Wow, that's
jealous.
Amazing. Congratulations, unexpected money from the government. Just got a rejection from Apex. That's awesome. We cheer for rejections here because rejections mean you're a working writer. Non-working writers don't get rejection. So we cheer loudly for rejections because I just want people to keep going. And it is a good thing because it means you're working. Okay, Kimmy started new meds this morning. That's awesome. Yeah, I really should have set up the yay button for this overlay, and I'm sorry I didn't. But there are many yays. More rejections from Underpope. Underpope, you are a machine this year. How many rejections have you gotten? Underpope's just been... submitting and submitting short stories. It's been amazing.
That's awesome.
Cheryl ended up submitting 3 short stories to 3 venues. That's awesome. And Kevin is releasing episode 198 of Productivity Alchemy today. Well, not writing. It is writing adjacent. Of course. We cheer information about vaccines. We cheer, you know, other good things in life too. But yeah, I'll cheer you at episode 198. Productivity Alchemy is awesome.
That's more episodes than I've done of shipping and handling, so.
But you're starting that back up again, right?
Yep, we are. We are recording on the 19th, I believe, if everything goes as planned. And we're going to probably retool the format a little bit since only one of us is... I was joking that I would be the shipping portion of of the podcast and Bridget could be the handling.
Right.
But,
So one thing I started doing is trying to approach writing as a LARP, because sometimes you just, if you think about, it's the whole confidence paradox. I guess it's not really a paradox, but it's just, to have confidence, you need to show confidence, which doesn't really matter how you feel inside. It's just like, if you're walking around pretending to be confident, then you can achieve what confident people can achieve, just, you know... You're a little clenched up inside, or a lot clenched up inside, but it's all role-playing. It's role-playing the confident author thing. And those don't really exist, I just want to say, but, you know, role-playing the very first confident author. So we started going through the Save the Cat beat sheet as a way to work on your LARP of your writing adventure. So I threw this at Jen about 3 minutes before we started the stream. But she's used to me having thrown a lot of crap at her with no warning over the years.
Always ended up delightful. So
I'm not going to ask about that almost, because like I said, the whole confident writer thing does not exist.
That's very true. But the whole act as if thing is it's a time honored tool of, you know, therapy and recovery. And, you know, if you act as if you already are XYZ, it's almost like you're sort of cheating your way to muscle memory.
Yes.
To start doing the things that, you know, need to happen. So
yes,
I support it. I don't know anything about Save the Cat, though, I will say. I think I read it about 10 years ago, so
it's like,
I may need...
Well, it's like the hero's journey, only a little bit more detailed. We've already done the... on Tuesday, we covered the theme stated, your setup, which is basically where you live and who you're around. And then the catalyst, which is what has attacked your inertia to get you to consider taking on this writing adventure. For me, I've been very, very productive this year. I don't think I told you. I finally broke out of my COVID malaise around late December, early January. And, I've edited 3 major projects this spring, and now I have to edit some of them again, but I've been productive and I've been finding a time to write. And I say that's because of, Alistair Stewart, who's a good friend of mine, who I talk to a lot about career stuff. I was telling him I wanted to start a habit of writing first thing in the morning. And he just hit me with the tough love and said, "Mer, you've been saying that for years, literally years. Stop saying that and find another time to write." And I'm like, hey, just despite, so despite Alistair, I started writing at 8 a.m. and I haven't stopped. So
that's awesome.
You know, Alistair calling me on the fact that I've been saying this for years was my catalyst this year. And so the problem where the metaphor breaks down a little bit is the catalyst, I believe in fiction, is always something outside of the hero. You don't just make a decision and go somewhere new. It's usually something forces you to make that decision. So you're going to need to do that yourself in this whole writing RPG thing. But now we have the debate, and I fear that the debate is something that a lot of people go up against, even beyond your own self-doubt. So, Jen, what have you found in your experience as the many roles you've had in publishing, what people struggle against, whether it be family or job or, you know, the various things that say, hey, maybe I could do this, but I might consider not. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, totally. There's so many. And I think that beyond sort of family commitments and job commitments, I would say that the biggest thing that is difficult for people is to decide that their creative ambition is worth time. Because oftentimes people will say that those other commitments are more important. And, you know, obviously, if you have children, it's important to make sure that they're clothed and fed and bathed and slept and stuff. But it people feel bad about taking time for themselves. People feel bad about, taking 15 minutes in the car. I've had clients who have sat in the car and like typed stuff on their phone but it took a lot of people a minute to get there, to be like, yeah, this is actually something I want to do, and it's something that I can do, and it's also something that I don't need to feel bad about. So I would say that that's the number one thing.
Yeah.
I also want to say that, like, sometimes that advice can sound like the only thing stopping you is you. Like, there, you know, many people deal with sort of like incredibly intense, complex home lives. And yeah,
especially now.
I do not want to make it sound like people who are prioritizing caring for themselves and caring for their families, or, you know, putting food on the table, that they are somehow neglecting them, that they are somehow failing.
Yeah.
Because that's absolutely not what I'm saying. But I would say that there, you know, it is okay to make the decision to take time for yourself just as it is okay to prioritize other things.
Yeah,
Sorry, I just don't want, I just want, don't want to be one of those people who's just like, you're just not thinking positively enough, because I want to punch those people.
I say something similar to that in that nobody can stop you but you, being just in that, you know, if someone says you suck, you can't do this, you can't write, you're terrible, well, that doesn't technically stop you from doing it. It hurts. It brings you down. I'm not saying it doesn't have an effect. I'm saying, but like some jerk on the internet saying your story was bad, they can't stop you. But you're absolutely right. And we try to talk about how I think a lot of people either hitting a very stressful part of their lives, this last year being a major one for a lot more people than usual, but also say new parents. I think they think, I can't write. I've got this baby. And, you know, having been a parent, I still am. She's just an adult now. I'm just like, look, it's okay to take time for this very stressful, important part of your life. The writing will be there when you're done. This is temporary. And yet, you need to prioritize writing in order to get it done, but you also need to respect the other parts of your life, and sometimes they may be more demanding than other times, and that's okay.
And even apart from saying it's okay to take time to do this, there's sort of like a prior step where people are like, me, like, am like, do I, is this something I deserve? Like, am I like a creative person, you know? I feel like there's people spend a lot of time sort of worrying about whether or not something that they should do before they can even get to the point where they can give themselves permission to say like, okay, this is something I can do.
Yes. So yeah, it just, well, you know, I stopped myself from writing for 10 years, so nobody else did that. But it was also just nobody tried either. So I know that going, it's just, it's hard out there sometimes. So the next stage is the break in two, which I always felt was a strange way to call basically the spot between act one and two when things really start to change. Like, that's the leaving Tatooine part of the movie. That's the going from District 12 into the Capitol part of the book. And it's where things have to change so that the story really gets moving. Whatever decision you made during the debate side is going to change something. And again, it's much more exciting to talk about this in the terms of a spaceship leaving Earth or Tatooine, and not necessarily your home and your office. But I sort of see it as this is a part where you need, when you're LARPing, being a writer, you need to change your situation, even if it's claiming a spot for your own. I remember I tried to rail against the need for a routine because Cory Doctorow had told me that if you tie your writing to a place or to a hot drink or a time of day, then if you're sitting in the airport for a 3-hour layover, will you be able to write? I don't know. And so I tried to stay away from that, but then I have embraced the fact that routines can be powerful. It can help switch your brain on and off. I wish I'd read this earlier, but I heard some pandemic advice recently of it's good to like get, I knew it was good to get up and get your clothes on, because that's like, that's unemployment advice right there. Because it still makes you feel like you're working. You get up, you put your clothes on, you shower, not in that order, and then you sit down and you start looking for your jobs. That's what I did when I was on unemployment. But also, someone was suggesting like a morning walk to signal to your brain that you've done your commute. So you leave a place and you come back to the place of work, even if it's the same place. But I think finding a space and maybe coming, moving forward, that could be a coffee shop or a library. But,
Well, it's interesting. I'm sort of watching the chat, and people have a lot of really great ideas. But in terms of the sort of like LARP metaphor of, I always think of this sort of interstitial, you know, the move from District 12 to District 1. It's sort of like finding out what the stakes are, part one. So this is the first set of stakes that you think are like, okay, this is what's going to happen. And then, of course, like, you know, she finds out that there's this whole other side of things further down, and the stakes get higher. But for your own life, I think that it's, you know, once you've made the decision, once you've given yourself permission, it's sort of almost saying, it's almost like a second round of permission, which is permission to kind of experiment with what works. Because I think too that for different authors at different points in their career, different strategies to approaching their writing will work differently. You know, maybe it's the getting up at 5:30 before your kids are awake and writing then, or grabbing time wherever you can, or someone suggested a timer and, you know, writing for a certain amount of minutes and certain number of minutes, sorry, and going from there. I think that that for me is maybe that phase, because you have to kind of, once you've given yourself permission, it's sort of like, okay, well, what's the next step, which is actually writing. And I think the other part of that is to not put too much emphasis on what you're going to do after the thing you're writing is done.
You mean like search for an agent?
Yeah, don't start Googling how to get an agent before you've finished your novel.
Yeah, people worry about that a lot. People also worry about what genre am I in? I'm like, well, you're not done yet.
Yeah.
So to catch up on chat, Underpope, I didn't say your number for the say it out loud, which is 44 submissions so far, 32 rejections, 12 outstanding. That is
Damn.
amazing. That's excellent. I wonder if women have a harder time giving themselves permission to take time to write than men do, especially if they have children. Oh, definitely.
You think?
Definitely. And I think one of the hardest things is if someone sees you strap on running shoes for the first time and go out and you're ha not have moved, you haven't moved in like a year, they're not going to say, well, you better get out there and run 20 miles. They're going to say, oh, you put your running shoes on and you went for a long walk. That's great. But if you say, you know what, I think I want to take some time to learn to be a writer, they're going to be like, why haven't you published anything yet? And it's like, we also have to give ourselves permissions to go through that early stage of writing poorly.
Yeah. Yep. So I wrote my newsletter a few weeks ago about George Saunders's book about the Russians and writing the short story. And one of his advices was, you know, avoid the crapo version of the story. And Murr was like, this goes against everything that I say, which is like, you've got to write the thing first. And I just want to say that, like, you can revise writing.
But you know, he doesn't make it sound like you're even allowed a crappy first draft. And
I was also quoting from a very long book, and you know, he's talking about sort of the story as the end point. I mean, I'm sure that Chekhov had first drafts, like everyone does. I don't trust anyone who says that they don't. I'm
True.
like, you're lying.
Yeah, I texted Jen about 10 minutes after her newsletter went out, and I'm just like, George Saunders would have hated my show. Would have hated it.
No, I think he probably would like it more than you would think.
Okay. Hey Val, good to see you. I didn't see you come in. I tied my routine to setting a timer because in theory I have a timing capable device anywhere I go. That's true. Nice. Meerkat was discouraged from writing for years, and I'm just getting back to it as an adult. Even if I never make it full time, it's still serving a helpful role in my life. I don't know how many people here know my long story of I quit writing when I graduated from college, and I lost 10 years of writing time because I didn't have any confidence. I didn't start really trying to write until my 30s. And part of me says, well, maybe you grew up in that time. And the other part of me says, damn, you've lost 10 years. But regret just, that's just wasted energy anyway, so. Oh, Kit says, ring a bell before you start writing, then every time a bell rings, a Pavlovian trained writer gets their wings. Nice. Yeah, Kevin does Productivity Alchemy, K. Sunny, and almost everyone I talk to about productivity has some sort of routine to get their head in the right place. Let's see. I had a therapist suggest quitting writing, almost fire them right there and then. Yeah, that would be something. I wouldn't be able to trust anything else they ever said to me. What therapist would try to tell you to not be creative?
That seems like bad therapy.
I'm actually worried about that therapist's children if they have any. He's like,
Yeah.
nope, finger painting. You're just no good at it. You need to stop. You'll
I
thank me
mean,
later.
I think that there is, I mean, at this point it sounds crazy coming from someone who is a publishing professional, but I think that there is a lot of emphasis on, you know, what to do with your writing once you've done it. And I think that it's okay to just write for the pleasure of it and improve your writing for the pleasure of it. I think that there is so much pressure to monetize the things that we do in our off time that people feel very pressured to, you know, turn it into something. It doesn't have to be anything. It just has to be.
Yeah.
You know?
And if it makes you happy, that's very important. It's, you know, things that honestly make you happy are few and far between in pandemic times. Grab hold of that happiness. You know, I will never do a violin concert or recital, but I still enjoy the lessons. I still enjoy learning.
I have a whole rant about hobbies and capitalism, but I'll save that for another podcast.
When are you going to become a professional hockey player, Jen?
Exactly. People are like, oh, you're going to join a team? And I'm like, you're really presuming that I'm better at this than I am. I didn't put fucking ice skates on until I was 33.
Yeah.
You think I have the center of gravity that could be on a team of any kind? Are you kidding me? I fear death.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Are you still taking lessons? Or I guess
not
because
until
of pandemic.
The fall, I think.
Yeah.
Well, the classes have been back and I took a couple last fall, but if you're an amateur, you quite rightly have to wear a cage like over like the front of your helmet so that you don't get hit in your fragile face bones with a puck. But it means that anytime I wanted to have a sip of water because I was wearing a mask under it, I had to take my helmet completely off. And it was such a pain in the ass. And also, I was only one of only two people wearing a mask. So even though I'm vaccinated and a lot of other people are vaccinated, I'm going to wait until the fall and there's like herd immunity at least going on before I go back. Because I just, and then I'll probably have to start at the beginning, but that's fine.
Yes. So the next part is the B story, which it starts to, I think this is where my metaphor kind of falls apart, starts to fray a little bit because it brings in the other parts of the adventure, such as extra subplots and sub-subplots and stuff. But, you know, I think that would be what you do in your adventure to read other books and, you know, commune with other writers. There was that very strange person who brought up the fact that writers are not your friends. And I'm like trying to think of my friends that aren't writers or involved in publishing in some way. There aren't a lot. And if my writers aren't my friends, then I'm really, really lonely. I'm so lonely.
It's a very strange way to look at the world, but,
and, it's
someone's read too much Game Theory, I think.
Oh yeah,
like,
I guess so.
Everyone here is competing for the same resources. Like, yeah, but you don't have to be a dick about it.
Exactly. So I think, again, when there's not a pandemic, meeting other authors, having either live write-ins with them or just coffee to talk about stuff, I think that would be the subplot in your adventure. Because when I was growing up and learning, like, you'd read Hemingway and then you'd read the stories about Hemingway and his group of friends, and I'm like, how did all those famous writers find each other? What coincidence was that? And, well, now I see how the writers become friends as they
go to the
same... So, the
1920s was just BarCon in Paris.
The whole thing was BarCon. One decade of BarCon, exactly. But yeah, now I know. I meet people at conventions or meet people online, and we got one huge thing in common, so we talk about that. And that's just,
well, and I think too your point about reading is a huge one, because one of the things about the way that the website that I use Readsy works is that you can sort, you basically get to sort of choose what you put a bid in on. You're sort of like a contractor. Well, I guess you are a contractor, but so sometimes I read a sample of a book and I'm like, okay, this person wants to write into this genre, like say fantasy or science fiction. And they're sort of trying to walk the reader towards like through like the concept of a spaceship. And I'm like, if you're writing science fiction, you can be reasonably confident that the person picking your book up is familiar with the concept of a spaceship already.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not to knock them, but it's just that people haven't read widely enough in the genre to sort of trust the reader enough to take some things for granted. So I think that side of it is really under neglected in sort of the annals of advice given to authors, which is like read more.
I think a lot of people either are afraid that they're gonna subconsciously absorb whatever they're reading and put it directly into their books, but I'll tell you right now, you've already done that. And it's going to keep happening, and you just gotta accept it. I wrote a book called The Shambling Guide to New York City about a woman who writes travel books for monsters and did not know until the first reviews came in how heavily affected by Douglas Adams I was. I read him obsessively in high school, but when I wrote The Shambling Guides, it just didn't click in my head that that's what I was doing. And thank goodness the person who pointed out said it was like an homage, not totally stealing from. But, so if you're worried about soaking in whatever you're reading right now, just give up, because you will have soaked in everything you've read up to now. So just accept it. That's how this creativity thing works. Peeking at chat, Underpope said that the time off for work for bipolar was also encouraged by that therapist, so that they did do Underpope a little bit of good right there.
It's like that meme of the girl throwing away the rock that she was ready to like throw at someone.
Yes.
It's like, all right. Today I won't choose violence.
Yes. No violence today. Space Valkyrie says, I hate when people view one another as competition. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. Especially because you get so much out of networking with your peers, not pooping on them. Hate the grind culture. Underpope says, I hate the grind culture where we all must monetize everything. So I think I'm gonna have to look at Save the Cat a little bit closer to figure out how to turn this on. I was also, I want to reiterate from last time that the real things behind this game of trying to LARP your writing career is the thinking of just LARPing, having confidence is important. If you want to go up to somebody at a convention, because conventions are coming back, I'm actually going to be at one this fall, and I don't know when I can announce it. So I will announce it
Ooh.
when I can. I'm very excited about it. But
I'm so excited.
what for Worldcon?
World gone.
I know, me
I
too.
the idea of being in a sort of shitty hotel bar with 100 of my closest acquaintances, it just fills me with such delight.
Yeah. I really can't wait. I'm like trying to Space Valkyrie says I'm very tempted to go to Worldcon since it's in DC and I'm near that area. Definitely come. It's fun. It's awesome. I'm very, very biased, but I've been
Also,
going
none of us are
since.
Nick.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just gonna say none of us are gonna know how to act. It's just gonna
I
be like,
know, I know.
do we hug? Can we hug? I don't know.
Yesterday I went for a walk and I have a neighbor who I've known longer than I've known my husband. I met him when I was working at a coffee shop in Chapel Hill, and he was I met him then, and then found out that we moved to the neighborhood where he and his husband moved, and so I hadn't seen him in a long time, and we both stood like 20 feet apart, unmasked, and just chatted in his yard. And at one point, it came out that we both had been fully vaccinated, and we didn't move. There was no like getting closer together to maybe hear each other better. No, it was just still like, oh, you're fully vaccinated too. Cool.
That's nice for you.
Yeah, great. So it's gonna be awkward, but I can't wait. It's just, yeah, I can't wait. I don't even have words, but Space Valkyries, I'm going to suggest everybody go. Everybody who shows any minimal interest to go because it's awesome. So if you have any questions about it, you can ask me like off when we're not streaming. Because I'd love to convince anybody to go because it's fun. And there are Hugos and it's nerd prom. And I haven't decided what I'm wearing this year. It's the only time in my life when I get to wonder about what I'm going to wear. I mean, I suppose I could write in a ball gown, but it's much more fun to drink cocktails in a ball gown
Did
next
you end
to.
up ordering the robe?
I did not order the robe yet. It intimidated me. I got a text from Jen one night that she'd ordered a murder wife robe. And I said, "What is a murder wife robe?" And it's basically when the wife has murdered her husband and the police come and she's like, "Oh, come in. I would make you tea, but I'm far too upset." And she collapses in a chair and she's absolutely gorgeous, but she is wearing what could be considered a house coat or a robe, but it is the kind of robe you would wear to the Hugos, which, Jen, I probably think you should. And it's, but it is, it does remind one of this is not a robe most people would wear unless they're planning on a spousal murder and want to make the cops feel bad for them. Yes, full cosplay, murder wife cosplay. And so
Exactly.
I was tempted by the robe, but you told me you gotta like talk to a tailor and measure stuff, and that's just where
I
I.
mean, by talk to a tailor, you mean you need to tell them your height.
Yeah.
Like through the Amazon chat, it's like
Okay, fine.
literally
Fine.
it comes from like overseas. Like it's
Yeah, I
not
knew
an
that.
expensive endeavor. But anyway, sorry,
Yes.
I digress.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. I do love the murder wife robe. I am tempted, I have to admit it. So yeah, people are talking about various things. World fa is so I guess World Fantasy is in person too. I hadn't heard. Is that the case, Lee? But
I don't
yeah,
think
I
I'm
was.
ready to like cross borders yet.
Yeah, that might be tough. 'Cause Canada's not doing great right now. I
Neither
think.
is America. Like what?
No, we're not. But I think more it's easier for us to get vaccinated now than it is for Canadians. And despite the people who don't want to, but yeah. I'm gonna let Jen have her day back shortly. If you have any further questions for
I
former
mean,
agent, current editor Jen Udden, please put them in the chat. Lee
I
got
can stick
first
around a little
dose.
longer too.
Okay.
I don't have one of the joys of being truly self-employed is that I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, that's one of the dangers, though. And if nobody's gonna yell at you, I'm not saying I need to be motivated by yelling, but like I said, it took a friend giving me tough love to snap me out of my funk to get writing every day. So, and granted, remember, I don't advocate writing every day necessarily. Writing every day is a good training wheels exercise to get you into a habit. If you can actually write every other day, every weekend, and get your writing done, cool. I do not adhere to the every writer must write every day or you're not a writer. Just want to say that because I hate absolutes. I hate absolutes in writing advice. Most advice really, but you know, if you can write late at night, if you can write with kids running around you, if you can write one day a week and you still get stuff done, then cool. That works. So, Catwood wants to know how the transition has been from agenting to full-time editor.
It's been fun and weird. Before it was pretty easy to explain sort of where I fit in the ecosystem of publishing, and now it's a little bit more difficult. But and I miss all my clients. I mean, I miss like I get to be friends with you, but it's also hard to not sort of, after giving advice for 10
Yeah.
years, it's hard to I'm like, it's not my job, it's not your job anymore to weigh in on what people are doing. It's not your job to sort of like ask how things are going, except
Yeah.
in a sort of friendly way. So that's been hard because I want to respect, people who have found new agents and people who are, developing these new professional relationships. I really, really want to respect those and keep them,
Yeah.
So, but I'm just like, I'm so curious. I want to know and I want to weigh in, but I don't have that right anymore.
Yeah.
But I would say that the thing that I like the most is that I can kind of organize my time the way that I want to. I can, it's similar to being an agent. I can sort of put in offers on the things that I want to work on. I don't always get them, just like in agenting, but I do, there, it is sort of an element of choice, which I enjoy. And, I've also been able to sort of pursue other interests outside of just work for the first time in like 10 years. I'm
Wow.
reading a lot more. I've started taking language classes again. I used to be fluent in like two other languages besides English, and I'm
Wow, I
taking
didn't know
classes in
that.
those again. Oh yeah, I thought I wanted to be a diplomat when I was in college. Can you imagine? I'd be the worst diplomat. Oh, I would be great at like cocktail parties, but if there was like a crisis, like with nuclear whatever, I would be under the desk, like not helpful. Plus, I don't want to move every 3 years, but
Yeah, true.
I did take 4 years of Mandarin Chinese and spent 6 months in Beijing and
Wow.
all this stuff. So I'm taking Chinese classes again and taking French, and it's just been really fun to kind of exercise those parts of my brain and stuff like that.
That's great. I just want to say that in one case, I'm still not sure if I should talk about, but Jen has handled not emergency, but like think fast on your feet situation at least once for me. And there was one I was going to talk about, but I can't remember what it is now. Great. But you think faster on your feet than you think you do. I just want to say that. Oh, that's right. It was the time you were so diplomatically, you did not want to tell me specifically, don't take a world language rights deal. And you didn't say that. You said, here's all the money you made by selling your rights individually. Make your decision, Murr. That was very diplomatic.
Well, yeah. It's
Yeah.
also not my job to tell you. My job is to give you the information, but or it
True,
was.
but
That was my job, but
yeah.
yeah.
Still, I appreciated that angle. So, Christian Writing wants to know, two-part question. Should everyone budget for an agent, particularly when going on the market for the first time, and should writers seek feedback from multiple editors? Wait, budget for an agent, how?
They corrected down, that should say editor.
Oh. Good. Okay,
Because
good.
I
I'm
was
glad
like,
you saw
no,
that, because
don't
I'm
pay an
just like,
agent.
have you not heard any of my shows? Oh, God. I thought you listened to me. Okay, yes.
I would
Budgeting
say
for an
it's,
editor.
you know, I've worked with, I never want to say, sort of like you don't like absolutes. I don't want to say everyone has to use an independent editor, or everyone has to have to pay someone to weigh in on their manuscript. I would say that the bulk of the people that I've worked with so far are people who are planning on self-publishing, who want to have sort of a professional eye on something that they're planning on presenting directly to the public. Or I would say another large group of people that I've worked with are people that have queried books before, that haven't really had a lot of luck and want to have a professional eye on it for their like second or third book as they're attempting in the marketplace. It's really kind of up to you and what you and honestly like what you can afford, because it's especially if you're looking for someone like me who's got a lot of experience, like I'm a little bit pricier than some people that are out there that are that are doing good work as editors, but I'm a little bit more expensive. But I never want to tell someone that they should spend money that they don't have. Like if you are in a person where you're if you're in a position where you're like, I have to put this on a credit card and I'll pay it off like over the year, like that's not a good idea. But if you have a little bit of money and you and professional feedback is something that you really want, I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I don't necessarily think you're going to get a lot of mileage out of a second or third opinion from multiple people, because I think at that point you're just throwing feedback at your manuscript for just for feedback's sake. So I would say that, you know, picking an editor that you know, would give you good feedback that you think is going to, you know, make your manuscript better. That's the most important thing. And also, you know, things like beta readers and critique partners are free and are still good resources for people to use.
Right.
I would also say that one thing that I do and that I know many other freelance editors do as well is I provide a sample edit. I have a anonymized edit that I've done for a previous client where I've taken out, you know, character names and place names, and so that you could so that I can kind of give an example of the kinds of feedback that I provide. So you can look at it and be like, oh wow, this girl really cares a lot about feelings, and be like, that's not necessarily what I'm worried about, and make it a, you know, you can see the kind of feedback that an editor gives
Right.
and make a decision from there.
Okay, that's interesting. So, but it's still by sample edit, you don't mean a sample edit of their stuff. You just mean you have something
No.
that.
No. A sample edit letter, basically. It's a sample of, the kinds of what you, the end product that you can kind of expect. This is what it's going to look like. This is the kind of feedback. This is how it's
Sure.
divided, stuff like that.
Gotcha. All
Yeah.
right. Well, if one last call for questions,
Also,
what?
I appreciate, sorry, Catwood and Katie just said, Jen, I think you mean it depends, which is
Yeah.
accurate because that's what we always said. Shipping and handling. So
That's right.
thank you. Appreciate that.
Oh man. Can we go back to conventions? I just really want to go to conventions again. I
God, I
miss
miss
it.
conventions so much. And I remember in 2019, I had done like 12 or 13, and I was just so tired. And I was like, I can't do anymore. And I was like, I'm just going to take 2020 off. I'm just not going to travel. And then the pandemic was like, ah, you're going to
Yep.
live with your parents for 6 months. How about them apples?
Yeah, I remember you were traveling a lot then.
Yeah. That was a dum-dum. That was too many conventions.
Well, you're starting your podcast up soon again, right? And that's shipping and handling. Where do people find that?
That is shipping and handling podcast.com, and you can find all our old episodes there. On Twitter, we're at ship and handling, and we also have an ask box on our Tumblr, which is the same as the URL.
Okay. And if you want to find out anything about me, that's merverse.com. On Twitter, I'm Mighty Mer. If you're listening to this later, on Twitch, also Mighty Mer. I stream on Tuesdays and Thursdays. This podcast, I do chatty things and gaming stuff on Mondays and Wednesdays. And if you want to support the Patreon and keep the lights on and keep light bulbs happening, that's patreon.com/mightymer. And we'll be back on, I guess, next week. Yeah, that's I'm doing live ditch diggers for the summer, and so but it's kind of moving around, and I gotta keep track of when it is. Next week's live ditch diggers will be Cat Rambo on Wednesday, so that should be
Fun.
exciting. Cat Rambo's been doing a lot of video and just writing advice and stuff, so was eager to have her on. But Jen, thank you so much. I've missed you. I'm so glad to have you here talking about publishing again, like the
You're
olden
so welcome.
days.
It was delightful to be back. And it's fun texting and being able to send memes back and forth. But it's also fun to interact in this way too.
Yes. Oh, that's right. I also sent you the erotica I wrote from the Jockey catalog, didn't I?
Yes, that
Half
was awesome.
erotica. A lot of fade to black, but
I mean, it's a time-honored tradition.
yeah. Sorry, guys. Anyway, I was proud of that. That was fun. Anyway, thank you all as well in the chat or listening later. Appreciate your attention and just helping me make this more, telling me that people are out there listening, because sometimes that's all I need to hear. But y'all take care. I'll see you next week. Have a good weekend. And
Have a good
I'll,
weekend. Thanks for
yeah.
having me.
Remember, you can support the show at patreon.com/mightymer. I Should Be Writing theme music provided by John Emilio. You can find more about him at johnemilio.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.